Usually in our daily life, if we're distracted, we're agitated, whatever, we go and eat something, we go out with our friends, we scroll on our phones. You scroll on your phones, I don't have one. You know, you do something to distract yourself. Eat, we go to sleep, we talk, we go out with our friends. When you do nune, you can't eat, you can't drink, you can't talk. When you have a problem, the only thing you can do is turn to chenrezig. That's all. There aren't any other options. Okay? And that's what I think is so powerful about the nune practice, is that we have to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. People experience more or less difficulties on the second day, but whatever difficulty you do experience, you can't distract yourself going and eating something or talking to your friends or turning on the TV. You have to look at chenrezig. And I think that's really powerful, because that's when you really develop a very close relationship with chenrezig. And that's going to be so useful and so important at the time we die. Because at the time we die, you know, our friends are of no benefit to us. We have to separate from them. Our body totally betrays us. Our possessions, forget about. We just have our refuge at that time, because what comes with us is our karmic imprints, all the mental habits that we've accumulated, you know. And unless we've realized emptiness, what's our refuge at the time of death, when everything else is vanishing? So it has to be chenrezig. And not chenrezig as a person, but chenrezig as compassion. I once saw a video on YouTube with His Holiness, and he, you know the verse in the Lama Chopa, "You are my guru, you are my yidam, you are my dakinis and dharma protectors," you know, where you're totally focusing on the guru and taking refuge, there's nothing else. And His Holiness, in talking about that verse, said, "My guru is bodhicitta." And he started crying. And so that reminds us, you know, it's not chenrezig as a person. It's chenrezig's realizations. It's the two bodhicittas that chenrezig embodied. And that's what our real refuge is. That's the guru. That's the Buddha. That's the Dharma. That's the Sangha. Okay? That our own realizations of bodhicitta, of the two bodhicittas. Conventional bodhicitta, what we often call bodhicitta, ultimate bodhicitta, the wisdom realizing emptiness. Yeah. And so when you're doing nune, those are our refuges. That's what we turn to. And that's what will really work for us. All our other refuges are basically distractions and don't bring us any lasting security or any lasting happiness. When we turn to compassion and conventional bodhicitta, when we turn to the wisdom realizing emptiness, that's where real security lies. And we're all searching for security in samsara, and there isn't any. Zip. Nothing. Okay? When we search for security in the three jewels, that's where it lies. Yeah. Because, you know, the actual refuge the last two of the four truths, true cessations, true paths. And it's the true cessations and true paths in our own mind stream that are our real refuge. Okay, not the external Buddha Dharma Sangha, not the external guru. Okay, it's the wisdom of bliss and emptiness, the internal guru, that is the real refuge. So when you're doing nune, we're in the process of developing the two bodhicittas. We're in the process of slowly inching our way forward towards true cessations and true paths. We're slowly starting to create the causes to be in touch with the inner guru, what will really protect us. So to have the possibility to do nune, you people are incredibly fortunate. Yeah, really fortunate. And, okay, maybe sometimes you get hungry. I don't get very hungry when I do nune, because I think once I make the determination, no food, then no food. I don't think about it. You know, you may get thirsty. No, it's not a big deal. You'll drink something tomorrow. Who cares? Yeah. You may get tired. Yeah. And struggle to stay awake during the sadhana. But you do enough prostrations to wake you up. Okay. Maybe your back hurts a little bit. Maybe your knees hurt. Maybe your stomach hurts. Yeah. But those things are, they're all transient. By tomorrow, they're not going to be there. Yeah. Whereas for many people in the world, those things are going to be there day after day after day, without choice. Yeah. But you have today to really take refuge in a very, very deep way and really connect with Chenrezig. Yeah. So the real Chenrezig we want to connect with are the two bodhicittas and the wisdom of bliss and emptiness. That appears, those realizations appear in the form of 11 heads and 1,000 arms and 1,000 eyes. And so when you visualize Chenrezig, it reminds you of Chenrezig's qualities, and it reminds us that we have the seeds of those qualities in ourselves, and that we are in the process of developing those seeds and watering those seeds. So I always find, you know, when my mind is restless or upset or you know, you're trying to fall asleep, but you're thinking about something, that if I just stop and I just visualize Chenrezig, especially Chenrezig's face, you know, those long, beautiful eyes, you know, and just the peace and composure on his face, that reminds me that I have this, that I can get in touch with the inner Chenrezig in here and call forth that kind of peace and composure and fearlessness that the external Chenrezig has. I can call that forth in myself by calling forth my compassion. Because compassion really makes you fearless. Yeah. When you have compassion for living beings, then that's the purpose of your life. That's what you dedicate your life to. Yeah. And so what's there to fear in compassion? Yeah. We just let go of samsara and go forth. I think these are some of the things that doing Nune can bring out in yourself. When you think of Chenrezig's arms, put your arms out like this. Yeah, go ahead, put your arms out. Yeah. Okay, imagine your heart is that big and bigger. Okay? You're not sitting like this. You are like this. Yeah? Chenrezig's totally unafraid of anything. He's out there, yeah? And looking at sentient beings with those thousand eyes and reaching out to help them with the thousand arms. So, you know, again, when I think of that, then it really, any kind of fear, there's no space for the fear in the mind. Because your life is just dedicated in that way. So then you don't worry, oh, do people like me? Do they not like me? Am I sick? Am I healthy? Yeah. You're just out there with your compassion. And so that reminds us very much of some of the verses that the great Kadampa masters say. You know, there's one of them that says something to the effect of, I can't quote it exactly, but if it's better for sentient beings, if I'm sick, may I be sick. Now, if it's better for sentient beings that I be well, may I be well. If it's better for sentient beings that I have problems, may I have problems. If it's better for sentient beings I don't have problems, may I not have problems. So when I really contemplate that state of mind, what would it be like to actually feel that way about life? Like, whatever comes, totally okay. I'm not going to argue with the reality, conventional reality in my life. Problems, sickness, whatever. People like me, people hate me. Things go my way, things don't go my way. Yeah. If I can make it beneficial for sentient beings, then, what else, what other greater thing could I do in my life? Yeah. And so to have that kind of attitude towards our life, towards whatever happens, yeah, is very freeing. We're freed from the self-centeredness. Yeah. And I think we can all see, especially in Nune, what happens when the self-centeredness takes over. Oh, I'm not going to eat. Let's see, it's Saturday, and I'm not going to eat till Monday morning. How many hours is that? Let's see. Oh, and now it's 3 o'clock, 3:30. Okay, I still have, over 12 hours before I can eat. What am I making? What's going to happen? Am I doing the sadhana right? I don't know. You know, you're just not worried about that. You know, there's just contentment with who you are and what you're doing because your life is dedicated to sentient beings. And you don't need, you're not seeking for the world to know about it and gaining some status. Oh, look at this group in Singapore. Their lives are dedicated for sentient beings. Aren't they wonderful, fantastic people? They're the greatest Dharma practitioners in the world. And you can go. No, you don't care about that. So you have really a wonderful opportunity doing Nune. So there's some questions. I'll try to answer them. Okay. So one person is saying, with the Chenrezig initiation, you're supposed to do the mudras when doing the sadhana. There's so many mudras. And if I get confused and lost, and I don't feel up to doing any of the mudras when doing the sadhana, is it considered breaking the vow? Relax. Okay, relax. Do you have a negative mental state if you can't do the mudras? You do what you can, don't you? You know, you just do what you can. So they say, yes, with Kriya Tantra, we're supposed to do the mudras. Are any of us perfect? Are we doing the sadhana perfectly? That's why at the end we say, Om Pem Sadhana, because we're not doing it perfectly. Yeah? So you do your best and you relax. Most important when you're doing the sadhana is the state of your mind, not how your fingers are. Yeah? Okay. Okay, so here there's a few questions. So we're supposed to generate divine pride as Chenrezig. But sometimes anger and irritation come up. Okay, so then what? So for example, I see my family and they're not creating virtue. And when I ask them to do something virtuous, like not gambling or whatever, they're not happy. So to pacify them, shall I join them and do worldly things? What do you think? Yeah? If your family is creating negative karma, do you join your family doing negative karma in order to belong, in order to pacify them? Is that wisdom to do that? No, it's not, is it? Yeah. So all of us, in some way or another, and every person who exists, we don't fit in completely with our family. We have an idea of what the family is, and everybody else fits in but us. But all of those other people feel the same way, that everybody else fits into the family but them. Yeah. It was a shock for me when I grew older, when I learned that everybody in secondary school felt like they didn't belong. Because I always thought, you know how there's certain kids, they're like the popular ones that everybody pays attention to. I wasn't one of those. Okay, I was one of the nerdy type. Yeah. And I thought, those are the popular kids. The rest of us don't belong. And then, after I graduated and I went off to college and university, and then I met some of those people who were the popular ones and talked to them, and they told me that they didn't feel like they belonged in the popular group. And they didn't feel like they were the ones who fit in high school. I was so surprised when the people who I thought were the popular ones who fit in felt that they weren't popular and didn't fit in, just like me. So it's the same way in the family. Probably not everybody feels like they totally fit in. So, that's okay. That's okay. Your family's doing something non-virtuous. You know, of course you try and steer them towards virtue. But you have to be skillful. And sometimes they're just not interested. So you leave them be and you love them anyway. All the years that I was a nun and gave talks, my parents came one time to a talk. They didn't read any of the books I wrote. Yeah. They criticized me to their friends. Yeah. What can I do? I did my best. And slowly over the years, they mellowed. Yeah, and things got much better. Okay, so it's kind of, you know, we have to accept the situation and not worry too much about it. Yeah, the important thing is that when you're with your family from your side, you're cheerful, you're happy, you're cooperative. How they respond, you can't control. So, this person said, you mentioned divine pride, or I like to call it divine dignity. Yeah, you feel dignified as generosity. But what's very, very helpful is when you have difficulties, if they're coming up in your meditation, past problems you had, or you know, different difficulties in the past, if they're coming up during your meditation, then you imagine being Chenrezig and going into that situation. So instead of being ordinary you, who is ego sensitive, whose feelings are hurt, who gets angry, you imagine that whole situation, but you're Chenrezig, and you hold Chenrezig's divine dignity. Yeah. So you're peaceful inside. The situation's still playing out the same, but from your side, you're not getting whacked around by it. I found this method extremely helpful for resolving things that happened in the past. Or if you're remembering some very painful experience from the past, you bring Chenrezig into that experience, and you can be Chenrezig, or you can be ordinary you, but you have Chenrezig on the crown of your head, and Chenrezig's on the crown of everybody's head as you remember the painful situation. And as you recite the mantra, you think that light flows from the Chenrezig on everybody's head into them and completely purifies them. So whatever afflictions are operating in those people from in the past situation, all of that is being released, is being washed away by Chenrezig's compassion and wisdom. Yeah? These methods are very good for making peace with the past and letting go of hurt feelings, letting go of grudges. Okay? Do you understand? Is this making sense? Do you get it? Yes? Okay. Okay, so somebody's asking, what's the difference between bad karma ripening and purifying our bad karma? Okay? So for example, if you have a bad fall, if it's bad karma ripening, then, you know, you see it as something negative. If it's purification, then it's not so bad, or you may even feel fortunate to have that fall. So the difference between purification and negative karma ripening is how you think about it. Yeah. If you, I had a fall. I'll tell you about my fall. Okay. So in August, I had some interviews with His Holiness for the Library of Wisdom and Compassion. So we were on our way to the first interview. And to get to His Holiness's office, the shortest way from where we were staying was to go through a hole in the barbed wire fence. Okay? So it was a big hole, barbed wire fence. I had gone through it before, no problem. Well, we're walking, you know, going through the hole in the barbed wire fence, and my robe caught on the barbed wire, and the next thing I knew, you know, I was face down on the asphalt, and because I was holding my bags, I couldn't even even put my arms out to blunt the fall, and I just banged, okay? But, okay, we couldn't be late for the interview with His Holiness, so, you know, you pick yourself up and you keep walking. And we get there, and, you know, there's a bump on my head, it's getting swollen, I'm kind of all scratched up here. My knee was pretty badly bruised. It swelled up a lot too, but that's covered. And, you know, we got there and tried to kind of clean it up with some wet wipes in the waiting room before we saw His Holiness. And then when we went in, His Holiness looked at me and said, "What happened to you?" You know? So, you know, when I fell down and I could hear the smack when my head hit, and I was wondering if I was going to have a concussion or not, but it didn't appear to. But my first thought was, oh, I'm going to see His Holiness. This is purification. This is getting rid of any obstacles. Yeah. And I've had similar experiences sometimes when seeing my teachers. And they're, you know, strange or painful things happening. And, okay, it's purification. And so, okay, when you're going to see your teacher, maybe you can think that way. Sometimes in other situations, we don't. We think, oh, I fell down, my head's swollen, I'm all scratched up, poor me. Yeah, it's the fence's fault. Yeah. Remember when your parents said, let's make bad to the fence, it hurt you. Okay, no, it's not the fence's fault. It's my karma ripening, but good. So whether I'm on the way to see His Holiness, or whether I'm, you know, on the way wherever, it doesn't matter. If I fall down and I say, this is my negative karma ripening, and now it's finished, well, that's purification. And I say, well, I'm glad it happened now. It sure beats a few eons in the hell realm. Yeah. So you just train your mind to see it like that. And then the ripening of bad karma becomes purification because of how you're training your mind to see it. So the trick is to do it when somebody criticizes you. When you fall down, it's easier. Yeah? When somebody rips you to shreds verbally, it's a little bit harder. Our ego comes up. The self-centeredness comes roaring up. But if we just say, this is my negative karma ripening, I've criticized plenty of people in my life. Yeah? Lots of people. In fact, I've probably criticized more people than people criticizing me. So somebody tears me apart, it's good for me. Yeah, it's good for me. I created the cause through my own self-centeredness. I have to be more careful with my speech. And if somebody criticizes me, they're making me a lot more humble. And I could use some more humility. You know how we get a little bit puffed up and full of ourselves? So somebody criticizes us. Okay, let's deflate the balloon and come back to reality. I'm not so stupendous. You know, and as Lama Yeshe said, I am the servant to others. So let me focus on that. Oh, so who's the one with the wrathful black face and orange hair? On the there, the second from the top. Amitabha is on the top. The next one down. That's Vajrapani. Okay? So Vajrapani appearing in a fierce form. Near the end, when the exalted wisdom beings of the self-generation absorb into the front generation, does it mean that in my visualization I am now in ordinary aspect? No. You remain seeing yourself as Chenrezig. It's just that the wisdom beings that you invoked earlier in the sadhana now return to the sphere of emptiness, but you still continue to see yourself as Chenrezig. And at that time, actually, is after they return, is when you, in your full form of Chenrezig with thousand arms, become the simple Chenrezig with one face and two arms. Okay, and then in the form of that simple Chenrezig, then you go about everything you have to do in the break time. Okay. Now the hard one. We were told to meditate on Dharmakaya. Is this meditating on emptiness or observing the emptiness of our own mind? It's both. Okay, will you be able to explain more on this and give us a short guidance on the steps? Okay. So, mention of the Dharmakaya comes up in a few places in the sadhana, as I remember it. One place is at the beginning when we're saying the homage to the lineage lamas and remembering that we are going to do the practice in the sphere of the Dharmakaya. So there the Dharmakaya is referring very much to emptiness and to the wisdom realizing that emptiness. Okay? So while we're doing the sadhana, yeah, we want to remember that everything in the sadhana is empty of inherent existence. Yeah. And that we as Chenrezig who have that wisdom realizing emptiness, we're meditating on the sadhana. So you want to imagine what it would be like to have the Dharmakaya mind. That's a pretty tough thing to imagine, actually. Yeah. Yeah. The Dharmakaya is the, it's two of the bodies of the Buddha. There's the wisdom Dharmakaya and the nature Dharmakaya. So your wisdom Dharmakaya is the omniscient mind. Can you imagine being omniscient? That's a tough one, okay? And then the nature Dharmakaya is the emptiness of the omniscient mind and the true cessations that that mind has. So that too is difficult to imagine. So we do our best, you know, whether it's in that part at the beginning, mentioning the Dharmakaya, or when we dissolve into emptiness before the self-generation and meditate on the Dharmakaya mind at that point. So the basic thing is to think about emptiness. But then the Dharmakaya is the omniscient mind of the Buddha, and that mind also sees all phenomena at the same time as it knows their emptiness. So sometimes we have to just spend some time thinking about what in the world is the Dharmakaya before we can even imagine having it. But this is where it's very helpful. Those of you who are doing some of the philosophical studies, when you're studying about the qualities of the Buddha, the 10 powers, the 4 fearlessnesses, the 18 unshared qualities, 21 aspects of awakened influence, all the 60 forms of speech, all these lists, you know, that sometimes you look at and you go, yeah. Then you think of somebody who really has all those qualities. And what would it be like yourself to have those qualities? And so, of course, having those qualities is predicated, is based on realizing emptiness and purifying our mind of all defilements. It's predicated on that. So you don't see all the qualities of the Buddha as something inherently existent. And yet, they appear and they exist. Okay? So you're thinking about emptiness, but you're also thinking about how conventional phenomena exist within the sphere of emptiness, that nothing exists separate from emptiness. It's not that emptiness is over here and phenomena is over there. When Lama Yeshe used to talk to us about emptiness, he would say, "You people, you think emptiness is way up in the sky. It's not." He said, "Emptiness is right here. Right here, now. You just don't see it." Yeah? And so when you start, you know, learning more, then you realize, oh yeah, the nature of all these conventional things is empty. Yeah? And I don't see that emptiness. What would it be like to see the emptiness of these things and still have these dependently arising phenomena appear to my senses? And that becomes the meditation on the illusion-like meditation on emptiness, seeing all phenomena as like illusions. Okay, so when you meditate on the Dharmakaya, really there's a lot that can be included in it. You know, first really meditating on emptiness, and then coming out of that meditative equipoise and seeing everything else as like illusions, in that it appears truly existent, but it isn't. And so relating to things as appearances, ourself included. Do you think you're an appearance? Yeah? Do you feel like I'm just an appearance? No, I am real, aren't I? I am real. I am me. Or we you know, meditate on the name. I am Chenrezig. I am really Chenrezig. I'm an inherently existent Chenrezig. Look at my arms, look at my eyes. I'm not just the appearance of generosity. I am generosity. Do you see how that grasping at inherent existence sneaks in everywhere? Everywhere we grasp. So it's interesting to try and, you know, see ourselves as just an appearance. So when we do the self-generation, that can be helpful, because one part of our mind doesn't feel completely comfortable thinking that we're Chenrezig, so it's easier to say, "Oh, I'm just appearing as Chenrezig." Okay? But we should really still feel like we're Chenrezig, except the way we apprehend the I shouldn't be, "I am Chenrezig." It should be very light I. Yeah. There's the appearance of Chenrezig. That's all. Just the appearance. And all these other beings, just the appearance of chemerasi. And when they criticize me, it's just the appearance of criticism. Actually, it's just sound waves. That's all criticism is, a bunch of sound waves. Okay, I think my time's up. So, very nice to spend time with you. I really sincerely rejoice at what you're doing. It's totally wonderful. And so please enjoy your time being chemresi. And it doesn't stop as soon as you drink the water tomorrow morning. You continue being chemresi. You continue, you know, reflecting on the two bodhicittas and manifesting the two bodhicittas.